I found him lying in bed, prostrate with pain. His heart rate was over 100 and irregular. His blood pressure was dropping, and wherever I touched his abdomen, the sensation made him almost leap off the bed in agony. He knew this was trouble. His mind was completely sharp, but he didn't seem scared.
"What do we need to do?"
he asked between gritted teeth. I explained that I believed his body had thrown a clot into his intestine's arterial supply. It was as if he'd had a stroke, only this one had cut off blood flow to his bowel, not his brain.
Okay, so it gets a little bit gruesome in just a little bit.
Without blood flow, his bowel would turn gangrenous and rupture. This was not survivable without surgery. But, I also had to tell him, it was often not survivable even with surgery. Perhaps half of the patients in his circumstance made it through. If he was one of them, there would be many complications to worry about. He might need a ventilator or a feeding tube. He'd already been through one major operation. He was weak and not young. I asked him if he wanted to go ahead. Yes, he said, but he wanted me to speak with his wife and son first. I reached them by phone. They too said to proceed. I called the operating room control desk and explained the situation. I needed an OR and a team right away. I'd take whatever and whoever were available. We got him to the OR within the hour, and as people assembled and set to work, there was the sense of a genuine team taking form. Jay, the circulating nurse, introduced himself to the patient and briefly explained what everyone was doing. Steve, the scrub nurse, was already gowned and gloved, standing by with the sterile instruments at the ready. Z, the senior anesthesiologist, and Thor, his resident, were conferring, making sure they had their plans straight as they set out their drugs and equipment. Joaquim, the surgery resident, stood by with a Foley catheter, ready to slip it into the patient's bladder as soon as he was asleep. The clock was ticking. The longer we took, the more bowel would die. The more bowel that died, the sicker the man would become and the lower his chance of survival. Everyone understood this, which by itself was a lot. People don't always get it, really feel the urgency of the patient's condition. But these people did. They were swift, methodical, and in sync. The case was far from easy, but for whatever reason, it seemed like nothing could thwart us. The patient was a big man with a short neck and not much lung reserve, making it potentially difficult to place a breathing tube when Z sent him off to sleep. But Z had warned us of the possibility of trouble, and everyone was ready with a backup plan and the instruments he and Thor might need. When Joaquim and I opened up the patient, we found that the right colon was black with gangrene. It had died, but it had not ruptured, and the remaining 3/4 of the colon and all the small bowel seemed to be okay. This was actually good news. The problem was limited. As we began removing the right colon, however, it became evident that the rest of the colon was not, in fact, in good shape. Where it should have been healthy pink, we found scattered dime and quarter-sized patches of purple. The blood clots that had blocked off the main artery to the right colon had also showered into the arterial branches of the left side. We would have to remove the patient's entire colon, all 4 feet of it, and give him an ostomy, a bag for his excreted wastes. Steve, thinking ahead, asked Jay to grab a retractor we'd need. Joaquim nudged me to make the abdominal incision bigger, and he stayed with me at every step, clamping, cutting, and tying as we proceeded inch by inch through the blood vessels tethering the patient's colon. The patient began oozing blood from every raw surface. Toxins from the gangrene were causing him to lose his ability to clot. But Z and Thor kept up with the fluid requirements, and the patient's blood pressure was actually better halfway through than it had been at the beginning. When I mentioned that I thought the patient would need an ICU, Z told me he'd already arranged it and briefed the intensivist. Because we'd worked as a single unit, not as separate technicians, the man survived. We were done with the operation in little more than 2 hours. His vital signs were stable, and he would leave the hospital just a few days later. The family gave me the credit, and I wish I could have taken it. But the operation had been symphonic, a thing of orchestral beauty. Perhaps I could claim that the teamwork itself had been my doing, but its origins were mysterious to me. I'd have said it was just the good fortune of the circumstances, the accidental result of the individuals who happened to be available for the case and their particular chemistry on that particular afternoon. Although I operated with Z frequently, I hadn't worked with Jay or Steve in months, Joaquim in even longer. I'd worked with Thor just once. As a group of six, we'd never before done an operation together. Such a situation is not uncommon in hospitals of any significant size. My hospital has 42 operating rooms, staffed by more than 1,000 personnel. We have new nurses, technicians, residents, and physician staff almost constantly. We're virtually always adding strangers to our teams. As a consequence, the level of teamwork, an unspoken but critical component of success in surgery, is unpredictable. Yet somehow, from the moment we six were all dropped together into this particular case, things clicked. It had been almost criminally enjoyable.
There we go. Little mic trouble. Sorry. So, that was a Checklist Manifesto, how to get things right on this little excerpt from that book. I personally highly recommend that book as well. If you're into checklists, or I think there's a lot of stories from his medical history. He worked as a surgeon. I'm into that a lot. I really like those stories. When I was growing up, I read every single Discovery magazine, Science magazine. I love those. And one of my favorite things in Discovery was some of the medical stories. I think in the back they had like weird medical stories, science mysteries, medical mysteries. Those are great. Anyone that remembers magazines, and further on that, Discovery magazine was one of my favorites as a kid. And one of the reasons why, besides 3-2-1 Contact and PBS science shows, where my science interest came from. And I've always wanted to do a science show. And I figured to do one about sociology because it seems like a very important subject, especially now. Too important for me not to do it. So we'll play you a WREV classic song and the show. Thanks for all the calls and messages, as always. You can't call me now, but you can reach out through the radio show email, which is Radio Lyceum, all one word. That's RadioLyceum at protonmail.com. If you want to email me about the show, or if you have organizations, social organizations like Rotary Club or whatever that you would like to have on the show, you could email me through there. I'm happy to have you on. We're staying away from political groups as much as possible because we're trying to cast the widest net as possible, which we've covered before in other shows, the why you want to do that. So, anyway, so we're going to end on New Order, Age of Consent. This is a WREV classic, so we do enjoy. It's one of my favorites, too.
Please. in a horse-drawn carriage down the old A5. The big 12-wheeler shook me bad. You can't stay here, the policeman said. You'd better get boarded someplace else. Move along, get along, go, move your shifts. Born a tatty, he lived in time in an old bow tent by a tatty field. The farmer said, the work's all done, it's time that you was moving on. You'd better get bored in someplace else. Move along, get along, go, move your shifts. Born in a common by a building site where the ground was rotted by the trail of wheels. The local people said to me, you lower the price of property, you'd better get born in someplace else. Move along, get along, go, move the shifts. Born at the back of a hawthorn hedge where the black hoarfrost lay on the ground. No eastern kings came bearing gifts, instead the Arthur came to shift. You'd better get bored in someplace else. Move along, get along, go, move a shift. The eastern sky was full of stars, one shone brighter than the rest. The wise men came so stern and strict and brought the Arthur to evict. You'd better get bored in someplace else. Move along, get along, move along, get along, go, move a shift. Wagon, tent or trailer born last month, last year, in far off days. Born here or 1,000 miles away, there's always men nearby who'll say, you'd better get born in someplace else. Move along, get along, move along, get along, go, move a shift.
So last song for packing up, that was Christy Moore with Moving On song, Go Move Shift. Great Irish musician, folk musician. We'll move on to automation. I have to get up out here, so I can't play like I normally do for an hour after my show. But maybe next week we'll play some more dance music. I'm not sure we have queued up for next week, but I do have lots of project irons in the oven. The one I didn't finish was about basically history of sociology that covers from pre-agricultural days to today. So that's a bit ambitious. I've written scripts that cover certain areas already. So and I didn't quite finish it week, and that's going to be mainly me reading the script that I wrote next week. And I might throw in a little sound clips here and there, and maybe some historical music, because I've got music coming on my ears of all genres. So I'll see you guys next week. This is James Harvey Stewart with Radio SAM. See you guys next week.
We'll be right back. dug it?